Hello and welcome back. And today we have the wonderful Lanice Brothers on the podcast. So Lanice is a yoga teacher, registered nutritionist, specializing in women's health, hormones, and her menstrual cycle. And she does loads of amazing things, including she's the host of the Period Story podcast, which we'll speak about later, and also has just written the book and published the book, You Can Have a Better Period. Which is, yeah, we'll touch on that as well. Lanice has helped hundreds of women improve their menstrual and hormonal health through her private practice and group programs, Instagram page, talks, books, workshops. So yeah, it does a lot for women's health. So welcome to the show, our first thing to say.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, super excited to have you. And I guess starting off, just I mean, I've covered it very briefly, but maybe it'd be great to know a little bit about yourself, about how you got started, how you kind of were attracted to the women's health space and what you do. It'd be great to hear, yeah, your journey into that.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm a nutritionist specializing in women's health, and the reason I decided to specialize in this area was because I had a passion based on my own experience of having really painful periods, which I know now is most likely endometriosis. And this all started from when I first got my period when I was 13. And my periods were never easy, they were always really painful, really heavy. And over the years, there was lots of trial and error trying to figure out, how can I get this thing under control? Lots of painkillers, a few short spells on the pill didn't really work out for me. And then eventually, I kind of cobbled a few things together. In parallel, I was working in advertising. So the lifestyle didn't help. Lots of late nights, lots of alcohol, lots of coffee, lots of just, eating out. And I got to the point where I was burnt out and I needed a change. And happily, that coincided with me getting pregnant. And that was a catalyst for me starting to properly look at other options. And I gave birth, did a year maternity leave. And then I decided, actually, let me properly retrain. And I thought, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I was thinking, oh, am I going to be a personal trainer? And I just thought, no, I don't think that's for me. And then I landed on nutrition because what I ate had been so helpful for me in managing my symptoms. And while I was retraining, I was freelancing in advertising, which is really interesting because it was at that I had been working in advertising for so long that at that point it felt just easy because I knew it so well. And when I finished training, my boss at the time said to me, "Are you sure you don't want to stay while you start your business?" And I thought, I could. But it would be better for me to just jump 2 feet rather than 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And I had the luxury of doing that because I had lots of savings and my husband is well compensated. So, I know that that's a privilege. But yeah, I graduated, I started my business, and I decided to focus on women's health because of my own spirit experience. But what's interesting and actually really interesting talking to you today is I was originally thinking I would specialize in gut health and like the different microbiomes in the body because I found it and I still do find that so fascinating. Yeah, so that's where I started and how I got to where I am today.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, and I think it's still super brave to kind of, as you say, jump in 2 foot, and just really go for it and really put your all into it. So I think that's super inspiring as well. And how did you kind of find that beginning part of it? How did it take off straight away? Did you have were there areas that What were the kind of learning curves with that? Like, yeah, how did you find that whole process?
It was challenging in the beginning. Because, you know, when you, if you think about, if you've been in a, even when you're working full time, you know, it takes, it really takes about 3 to 6 months to settle properly into a job. Part of that is you develop shortcuts in that you have templates. You think, oh, well, I've spoken to that person before. So, you know, I know what sort of small chat I can start the conversation with, or I worked with that client before, so I have the templates and all of that. It's it was that, you know, developing all of the processes and templates, and then on top of that, building a kind of reputation for myself so that I could attract clients. So it was, I'd say that the first 18 months were hard. It's still, having your own business is hard. It's just hard in a different way now. But in the beginning, it was very much believing in myself and believing that this is what I wanted to do, and it was worth all the sacrifices that I had made, and it was worth just the kind of wobbles that I would have wondering if this was, I was doing the right thing.
Yeah, definitely. I can only imagine. Yeah, it's quite a scary place to be, isn't it? But I'm very glad you persevered with it because you've done some amazing things. But now you obviously work with quite a lot of people and have a big client base in women's health. What have you found have been some of the really most common symptoms or issues or problems that you've kind of had to deal with just from across the board?
I think period pain is the biggest one that I see. And I think it comes from this under this kind of cultural understanding that periods are just supposed to be painful. And when I say, well, actually, no, they're not. If you're experiencing pain, it's a sign that something's going on. It blows people's minds, because that's just something that we get taught either from our families, our friends, or just kind of through cultural osmosis. You know, you see women on TV shows and movies, oh, I've got such bad cramps, it's my time of the month, and oh yeah, no, it's supposed to be like that. When really it's not. And other than it's other period problems like heavy periods or really irregular periods, when periods go missing. So all manner of period problems. And then it's also diving into conditions like, well, what actually, what happens when your period is not, is painful, but it's not quote unquote just period pain. And then there's, we get into endometriosis, adenomyosis, fibroids, and then PCOS as well. So it's been really, really interesting just seeing commonalities in symptoms, but also the education part of it, I find so fascinating and actually so necessary. I just see that there are so many questions, and this part I feel really passionately about. You know, just going on a platform like TikTok, where you just there, I put, will put a post up, and I get so many questions, because people just aren't taught about, we're just not taught about our bodies and like simple things like the fertility window. Like I did a post recently about the fertility window, and like you can get six pre pregnant 6 days in a menstrual month, and that blew people's minds.
Yeah, no, I think that leads us on really nicely to your book where you can have a best period, where I know you speak about the narratives about women's health and that they're just normalized at the moment. I thought that was really interesting. Actually, you've already answered one of my questions, which was if you think that there's any other narratives surrounding women's health. But yeah, things like fertility, I think we even see it ourselves as screaming with the vaginal microbiome and people just not even knowing what it is, let alone how it can impact your fertility, the risk of UTI. And I think it's so important when so many women normalize so many painful symptoms or even just uncomfortable symptoms like consistent BV or always getting thrush or just feeling really itchy or dry and things like that. And it's, well, actually, there's an issue to address here. This women's pain shouldn't be normalized. So I think that was That's a key part of your book, I think, and also super interesting just to kind of, it's great that you're spreading awareness through that with your clients. But
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, aunt and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
The station that makes you feel good.
I guess with that, so you obviously offer your clients the kind of education about their own body, but where do you think are the kind of major pitfalls, even in like the people kind of have in their own lives, or like ways in which you say, oh, this is an easy step that you recommend most people do that they maybe just don't realize to like the listener?
Yeah, I think an easy step, I think, is shifting your mindset to looking at the power of what you eat and what you put on your plate, and just the idea that, and this is just like a Not this. This is a phrase that I talk about a lot. If you think about the fact that we typically will eat three meals a day, 7 days a week, that's 21 different opportunities to add in foods that support your health. And we've gotten to this mindset of around food of, oh, we'll just cut this out, cut that out. And what I love is talking about, well, actually, sure. Yeah, you can benefit from taking things out, like, there alcohol is a huge one, and it's, so detrimental to our health. But what about the foods that we add in? So I was talking to someone this morning, and she was talking about how she spent a lot of time cutting loads of foods out, no sugar, no dairy, no alcohol, no gluten. And by the end of it, she wasn't sure actually how to eat. And I think that's a real problem. Well, how do I eat in a way that I feel like I'm eating enough, it's nourishing, and it makes me feel good? So what am I adding in? And that's a really easy shift to make, to think about every meal, what can I add in, rather than, oh, I'm doing no carbs, it's, oh, no sugar. Well, actually, what am I adding in?
Definitely, that's a lot more of a that's a mo lot more positive way of looking at eating as well, I think, rather than being like restrictive. It's more about, having a balanced meal. So what kind of things would you say people should add in that people are missing out on, women in particular, I guess, as that's
Yes.
the focus?
So cruciferous vegetables are a big one. So broccoli, cauliflower, kale, Brussels sprouts, kohlrabi, all of those have this nutrient in them called sulforaphane. And that is really, really powerful for supporting the liver in the way that it detoxifies estrogen, liver detoxification and that kind of three-phase process. And if you're adding in, like, those types of vegetables, so one, maybe two meals a day, it can make such a difference, because I don't think we realize the power of the nutrients in the food that we eat. You know, so many of us are used to just kind of going around with low energy and thinking, well, it's normal to just kind of be dragging through the day, or, oh, well, I'm supposed to feel bad right before my period, you know, premenstrual symptoms being normalized or pain being normalized, that the food that we eat can make such a difference. So those cruciferous vegetables supporting the liver in the way that it breaks down estrogens, and that rebalancing estrogen and bringing it in line with progesterone in a healthy way can make a huge difference to a lot of symptoms that people experience around their menstrual cycle.
Yeah, no, that's a really good bit of advice, I think. Yeah, there's so many benefits of those kind of vegetables. So I think that's super interesting. And also, I guess takes us on, we spoke a bit before about your book, You Can Have a Better Period. I guess what do you, was it because of your work with women and having this so little knowledge that you kind of were driven to write this book? Like what was the thought behind it? What prompted you to really make that leap?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I got approached to write my book. So an editor had been following, we've been following each other on Instagram for a while. And she said to me, you know, I really would love for you to write a book. And at the time I was just like, I'm not sure if I want to do this, which I just, it's hilarious to me now. Because it's have writing a book, and my book has opened up so many opportunities for me. But eventually she was like, she kept pushing in a the nicest possible way. And then so I got my deal and then got an agent, and we kind of started that whole journey of writing the book and what it was going to be about. And my agent was actually my old agent was the one who said to me, I don't think I originally was going to call it How to Have a Better Period. And she said, no, you need to make it more direct and make it feel really empowering. And she said, you can have a better period, is more of a statement, you know, in a kind of Paul McKenna style, you know, his like books, like You Can Heal Your Life and all of that. Or you can heal a broken heart. And it was a kind of a stake in the ground of, yes, you know, this is possible. You can do this. And the book, it really, I tried to put as much information in it as possible in a really clear, easy to understand way. So I go into the science, but I try to put it I wrote it in a way that anyone could read it and understand. And I go through each of the four phases of the menstrual cycle. And then I have chapters on specific issues. So, what happens if your period is really painful? Then, that chapter, I talk about painful periods, endometriosis, I talk about adenomyosis, fibroids. What happens if your period has gone missing? Then I talk about PCOS in that chapter, hypothalamic amenorrhea. And then I talk about the emotional side of it. And that's where I dive into PMDD. And then I talk about premenstrual anxiety and depression. So I wanted it to cover as many issues that a woman might experience during her menstrual cycle, and really start to shift these kind of misconceptions around periods and menstrual health.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's one great thing about the book is that it's super accessible. And I think that's also super important because there's no point writing something that includes all really long words that no one understands, but when actually you just kind of want the information. So I think that's really impressive. Is it mostly aimed at, would you say, women who are not on any form of contraception or like, yeah?
Yeah, it's I do talk about the fact that, you know, it can be helpful if you are on contraception, just to kind of give you an understanding of your menstrual cycle, the importance of ovulation, because, you know, with the pill you're suppressing ovulation and you're not making progesterone, which is just such an important hormone, not just for menstrual health, but for, your mental health, for your bones, so many other functions in the body. So just to help women, even if they are on hormonal contraception, to better understand their bodies and to say that, when you do come off of it, that this book will really help you.
Definitely. No, that's really interesting as well, what you said about progesterone and how the pill suppresses that. I guess it's kind of off topic, but would you kind of say that is a form of contraception that maybe we should be moving away from and towards other forms of contraception in terms of female health long-term impacts?
Yeah, I do. I do think it just, I find it troubling that girls are put on the pill at such a young age when we know that, like, for example, the prefrontal cortex, it doesn't fully develop until I think it's 25. And, then you have this pill that you're taking every day, disrupting the communication between the brain and the ovaries. And then not having that progesterone, what effect is that having on the way that your brain is developing? And I do have to acknowledge that, someone with really severe endometriosis might actually find being on the pill really helpful and just not having periods for a bit, like a natural breed rather than a withdrawal breed, because it might be a bit of a mental relief, just not to have to go have the experience those symptoms. But it has, I think it's really important that that's not going to fix your period. It's not going to fix your symptoms. Once you come off of the pill, those symptoms will come back and you will have to address them at some point. And I do think that doctors do need to have more honest conversations with their patients about, well, what is the pill actually doing? How long should they actually be on it? And what does the pill really do to your body? Because, you can't, there has to be, there are consequences to not making progesterone.
Definitely. I think you're so right. There needs to be way more education and also, way more education about the whole process itself. I think you're given a big list of possible side effects, but you're not given necessarily the information about what it may do to your brain, what it may do to your, like you in the long term in other ways like that. So I think that's really, really important and really interesting. And definitely something people should consider. But I think if contraception is kind of the way that a lot of women want to be on some form of contraception, is there perhaps one that you would like recommend or one that just is better, say, for your hormones and progesterone and development and things like that?
Yeah, so I think with there are drawbacks to all forms of contraception. If you're doing the kind of method where you're tracking your cycle, there's drawbacks to that because you might, miscount, or maybe your cycle might change and you're actually ovulating and you don't realize it. There's drawbacks to barrier methods, condoms. Even though they have a really, really a high efficacy rate, it's like 99.9% effective. There's still that risk. So going into any form of contraception with your eyes open, is really important. I think that if you're on contraception, and you're because you're having sex, I think there we owe it to ourselves to be able to find a way to have an honest conversation with your partner, with your sexual partner, about, especially if it's a you're in a long-term relationship, well, actually, is there something we can both do? Because there's more information coming out about the male pill. But then the question is, well, do you women trust their partners to take it? There's like I have heard women say that, well, I don't trust that my husband or my boyfriend will take it every day. So I think to answer your question, I think, non-hormonal contraception methods like the copper IUD can be interesting. However, we, you know, what it does is that it creates a state of inflammation. And so if you're creating the state of inflammation, you have to manage that inflammation and you're not, exacerbating like chronic, any kind of other chronic inflammation that might make any symptoms worse. So if you have endometriosis, I don't think the copper coil is necessarily the best option because of that whole kind of effect, the effects of inflammation. So it's an interesting one. There's a lot of research that I think someone going thinking about contraception should do in order to make an informed decision for themselves. You know, barrier methods are kind of easy. Condoms, the discs, male and female condoms, diaphragms, they are relatively easy. And then once you go into that next tier of having something fitted, then then there's always greater risk there.
Yeah, no, I think that's super important, all of what you said. I think I completely agree. I think just coming into the contraception conversation with your eyes open, as you say, and just being informed, as opposed to, I think a lot of the time people just say, oh, I'll just get the pill and then that's done and I don't have to think about it again. But I think really figuring out what is best for you, because different contraception will suit different people in different ways. I think just really, yeah, opening up our eyes to that conversation is super important.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And it was interesting. I think you kind of touched on it there about engaging men in the conversation as well. And I don't know how you felt about that with your book, So That You Can Have a Better Period book. How do you kind of think that we can open up that conversation to men as well? Because obviously, your book, I would obviously say that it's not. It shouldn't just be read by women, but I think a lot of people, it obviously attracts more of a female-based audience. But how do you think we can really open up that conversation so that men have a greater awareness of not just periods, but female health in general and how that can affect people in the workplace, in the relationships, et cetera, because I just think, yeah, how do we kind of make that accessible?
Yeah, I think it needs to start in schools. So, when you have it needs to be this conversation needs to be decoupled from sex ed. Sex ed is, learning about sex and that kind of, how does what different types of sex and how does it actually work? And then having conversations about health and puberty and periods and how our bodies change. I think that's a totally separate conversation. But then when you learn in school, okay, sex is you is for making babies. Don't have some schools teach abstinence. And then they learn about, go on the pill, then you won't have a baby. And I think we do ourselves a disservice when we learn about our bodies that way. And boys need to be taught about all of this stuff so they learn that it's not something that's dirty or shameful or secretive. You know, they will have women in their lives who have periods, and if they will learn that it's something that's completely normal. And if they go have to go to the store to buy tampons or pads or whatever, it's not a big deal. You know, it's something that is totally normal, and they can approach, you know, that experience and that situation with compassion.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's definitely the way forward. I remember when I first had period education in primary school, I think it was the girls being taken to a separate room and kind of given that chat just with the girls. And I think that that's something that actually boys should know about, because even as you get to a lot older age, so many boys know so little about periods that it's, yeah, you are a bit dumbfounded by it sometimes. So I think just knowing like even how to put a pad on or something, I think that you it's shocking to know how few know about it. So I think, yeah, that's super interesting. Yeah, so we kind of gone up a bit off topic there, but I guess maybe my last question I had about your book as well is like, how did you find the writing process? So how did you was it hard? Was it like what challenges did you face, or did you kind of set a clear message at the beginning and you yeah, found it a lot easier?
Yeah, so what was really interesting was to kind of get to the point where I was offered a book deal. I had to write an outline, and I made the outline quite detailed. So chapter breakdowns. I actually in the end ended up having to write four chapters. And so that was actually really helpful having that as a guide. And what I said to my editor, I said, I can't just have a deadline to submit the whole manuscript. I need you to give me like monthly or kind of like, you know, 6 weekly deadlines, because otherwise I will procrastinate. Even though I want to do this, I know myself. And so she did that, and that was really helpful because it focused my mind. But I wrote the book in 2021. So I kind of all these conversations were happening in 2020, got the deal in 2020, signed it in November 2020, wrote the book between January and July 2021, then went through the whole process of editing the manuscript with the proofreader and the editor between August and October 2021. And that was just, I think I read my book about like six or seven times.
Yeah, sick of it.
So, you know, it was a challenging process because I did it in such a compressed time period. But I found it really interesting because I could dive into the research. Like, it was really important to me to have my book be really well referenced. I have, I think, over 300 references, in my book. And that was really important to me because I could always point to the evidence, and no one would ever be able to come to me and say, well, this isn't true. And I would be, because I could say, well, no, this is, I could point them to different papers. So I was got very, very familiar with, you know, PubMed and, you know, just diving into the research and being able to parse really kind of complex research. And yeah, sometimes I would have such a headache because I would be sitting at my computer reading these papers and trying to break down these concepts in a very easy to understand way. But it wasn't easy, but it was so worth it, and I'm so glad that I did it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's super great. I think making that research, that top level research, accessible to people that don't have the time like you did to be able to sit through all the and read all the articles. So I think that's, yeah, really great. And very inspiring. But do you think there's another book on the cards? Is there anything else that you'd want to write one about?
Yeah, I would love to write a book around yoga for the menstrual cycle.
Oh wow. Okay, yeah, go on.
Yeah,
What tell
yeah.
me about that.
So like the physical side of supporting the body, I find really fascinating, and just understanding how yoga can help us and support our menstrual cycle, but also support different conditions
Yeah.
connected, like endometriosis, for example, fibroids, perimenopause, postmenopause. I think that's so interesting. So that's something that I would love to do.
Oh, that sounds super interesting. Well, I look forward to it possibly coming out in the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been so, so great to have you on. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. And I guess, is there anything else that you want to add onto the end of it, or anything else you want to chat about?
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been really interesting. I would say if anyone wants to get in touch with me, they can find me on socials. It's at Eat Love Move, and my website is www.eatlovemove.com. You can pick up a copy of my book on Amazon, on Waterstones, online. And I also work with women on a one-to-one basis. So I have group programs and one-to-one programs. And I have some slots opening up to work with me in June. So yeah, just get in touch.
Yeah, we'll attach all socials below so that will be linked. And yeah, thank you so, so much for coming on the show. It was lovely speaking to you.
Thanks for having me.